up in the morning, you hear the work bell ring, and I march you to the table. You see the same old thing. Ain't no food upon the table. There's no fork up in the pan. But you better not complain, boy. You get in trouble with the man.
Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a light on me. Let the midnight special shine a hell of a loving light.
Do this shit.
Hell yeah.
Hell fucking to the yeah. It is June 5th. June 5th.
Who the fuck knows?
Fizziv. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Fifth.
And we are the Untitled Movie Podcast on morelikeradio.com. It's been, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, it's been a lot of days and you haven't listened to us recently, and it's perfectly fine because we're back. And as always, I am joined by my much more intelligent, much more in the know friend about movies and whatnot, Chris Whetton. Chris Whetton, how are you?
We're back. We're bad. You're black. I'm mad. I'm great. How are you?
I'm on vacation, and I'm drinking as we're talking about this.
I'm on vacation. Axel Foley.
That's right. So, a lot to get to. Not really a lot to get to in the sense of what we usually do, which is talk about movie news and, you know, on the occasional times that we actually do get to review a movie that we've been able to see that has come out in the movie theater.
In real time.
We've got two of them we've actually watched, and then we've got a couple of other ones that we snuck in there because they're very interesting. They actually mean a lot to both of us, and it's, you know, our show, so if you don't like it, then too fucking bad.
Yeah, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, go fuck yourselves. But most importantly, though, go fuck yourself. June 5th box office. Weekend of June 3rd through the 5th box office 2016 because your cumulative total for your top five movies did not go over $100 million.
Nothing that could get me to go to the movies.
No, Ninja Turtles 2 was number one with $35.3 million.
God, the first one was terrible.
X-Men Apocalypse in its second weekend was with $22.3 million.
God, the first one was terrible.
Me Before You, which apparently had mixed reviews.
What the fuck is that?
I have no idea.
Oh, wait, that's got Khaleesi in it.
Right? Does it really?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, shit, okay. Well, anyway, Khaleesi made $18.3 million.
Woohoo! Mother that's actually really impressive.
Mother of Dollars.
Yeah.
Alice Through the Looking Glass, the sequel to the shitty Tim Burton movie that no one wants to admit that they saw, but $1 billion can't be wrong, made $10.7 million second weekend.
That's really surprising to me that this movie's doing so badly. How fucking badly is this movie doing?
It's to the point where they're probably going to break even just based on their international and then Angry Birds made $9.8 million.
God.
so.
Hey, come to the movies, I'll buy your ticket, watch whatever you want to watch.
Nothing? Like, not one of those? Not even X-Men?
No. It's got, like, Oscar Isaac in it. And yeah, I have seen all the other ones, so maybe I'm, like, mildly curious to know what they do. But everyone is just saying, like, it's just a shit show. It's not terrible, but it's, like, completely uninteresting, you know? Like, completely, there was no point in this. The X-Men are sort of sitting on the sidelines the whole time, including Magneto, who's the coolest character. But, yeah, if I had to choose one, I guess it would be that, because I like Fassbender, I like Oscar Isaac, you know.
Yeah, James McAvoy, he's a good actor, right?
Yeah, I like McAvoy, yeah.
Yeah, he was with the Last King of Scotland and Filth.
He was in Filth, was good, yep. I mean, I like a lot of the actors that are in the movies, but, again, it's enough already. Like, I hate to sound like my grandmother, but it's enough already.
Or with the sequels and the superhero movies and all that?
Yeah, you know, like, I don't care anymore. Like, at a certain point, and this is true of anything that's good, and the X-Men movies were good at the time, you know? First one's fine. Second one, everybody sort of agreed was, you know, like, they hit their stride. Third one, got a little fucked up because Ratner got his, you know, stinky mitts on it.
His nut. Nuts are wet on it.
It got a little bit of Ratner on it.
His juice.
The fourth one, they get Matthew Vaughn. They really come back, you know, in most people's eyes, you know.
To be fair, it's not a lot to come back from The Last Stand, especially when you're using one of the meme sayings from that year, I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. Ugh. Like, that's one of the main selling points of your movie.
Forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I forgot about that.
Fucking Vinnie Jones, too. Vinnie Jones, like, a good fucking, like, you know, solid actor. Former football / soccer player, by the way. I didn't know if you realized that.
I did, yeah. Solid actor, though. I don't know. I mean, I love Snatch as much as the next guy.
He's a good...
Yeah, I do.
Bit actor. Not good actor.
Sure, yeah.
So, like...
Never the guy that should have been playing Juggernaut.
Absolutely, no.
Right?
He looked like he took a steam, like, way too long.
Yeah.
And just kind of, like, had it, like, had the huge, like, helmet, like, the dome plateau helmet on his shoulders, like, a little too loose.
Yeah, he's too thin, you know? That whole movie took a steam. Yeah, that was Ratner. We can all blame Ratner for that. Yeah. Matthew Vaughn comes back, first class, you know, like, sort of get their, you know, like, a whole new start. And then Singer somehow doesn't fuck it up with Days of Future Past.
Right? Yeah, but I think it was riding on the coattails of...
Absolutely.
Yeah, first class.
Yeah, absolutely. And now this one, it's like, all right, get the fuck out.
Yeah, it's fine. Whatever. I mean, I'm not... I'm probably going to watch X-Men.
Yeah, no, I'll watch it. I'll watch it on cable, or I'll get it from Redbox or something like that, but I'm not going to the theater, and obviously many people are not, because nobody went and saw it.
Right. But, you know, more along the lines of movies that are on the horizon, here was something, we're not going to talk a lot about articles or that type of, like, movie news tonight, because we're going to have movies that we can actually talk about, but there was one story that really piqued my interest, and piqued my interest in the sense that I don't care about Star Wars. I really don't.
Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting that Rogue One, for whatever reason, it's being directed by Gareth Edwards, mm-hmm. who directed Godzilla. It's the prequel movie right before A New Hope.
Preview was great. Everybody went nuts over the preview.
Episode 4, not 1. Fuck you, George Lucas. You know, that whole thing.
Yep.
Apparently they're going through 40% of the movie to reshoot it because it doesn't jive with whatever... the slope the Disney executives want.
Right. It doesn't have that feeling, that Force Awakens type feeling.
Yeah, I would like to know your opinion because they're, again, a lot more precious to you than they are to me, but man, you know what? Here's the thing. I wouldn't think that you would hear about any of this stuff, but it does involve Disney and it does involve Star Wars, and so there's always going to be some kind of story within a story or a non-story, and then there was, like, the story after the initial thing where they said that we reshoot all the time.
Yeah, it's fine. A lot of movies do reshoot, especially big movies like this. There's always a lot of reshoots. 40% is a lot, if that number is true. And then after, you know, it was sort of, like, thrown out there, okay, there's going to be reshoots, and then there was sort of some studio insiders that, you know, anonymously said, like, oof, we got issues here. Like,
it really?
Yeah, no, that's what the articles were saying, which is what the issues are, that the movie has a dark tone, that it doesn't have the, you know, sort of like light, fun, adventurous tone of the original Star Wars movies and of The Force Awakens, you know?
Okay.
But, you know, like, what do you expect? You go get a filmmaker like Gareth Edwards, like who made Godzilla. Like, it's a dark fucking movie.
Okay, wait. Let me just first answer that comes out of your mouth. So, would you want a darker tone? These aren't supposed, like, it's not a fucking happy story. Like, I don't see how everyone, like, just, like, completely understands that, you know, Empire ends on a fucking down note.
Yeah.
It was made perfectly clear in Clerks, and to anybody that's actually watched the movie, but,
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree. And, look, if the movie has the tone of the preview, then it's perfect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, like, the fanboys went nuts over that preview. And I think probably the executives are, like, freaking out. I apparently didn't test well, is what some of these sort of rumors were saying. It didn't test well.
Yeah, there was a... from the Hollywood Reporter, the report had said, quote, that while Edward's first cut was a solid showing, it didn't measure up to the bar in terms of four-quadrant appeal. What? Yeah. Anything that, less than extraordinary won't do... Says a studio insider.
Four quadrant appeal is Plano, Texas.
Oh.
That is, no, seriously, that's what that means. Like, you're talking about the different quadrants, you know, the different age groups, male, female, like, that's what they're talking about. And so, it doesn't measure up in that way. Eh, I don't think it matters. You put the Star Wars name out there on something like that. If it has the tone of that preview that all the fanboys went nuts for, myself included, I thought the tone of the preview was awesome.
Great.
And there's no fucking Jar Jar Binks in there, you know, like, it was nothing like that.
No, fucking Ben Mendelsohn standing there in his white...
Hell yeah.
Yeah, fucking, like, uniform and...
Looking like
and,
a badass.
Yeah, looking like I just fucking did something completely, you know, irrevocable
soulless.
And evil.
Yeah, absolutely.
But here's the thing, though, is that, what is your preference? Do you want the episodic movies that are going to be released 8, 9 from here on out to be different than, you know, the ones that you can take a chance on?
Absolutely, like, yeah. No, you're right. Like, these you can take a chance on. This is a one-off. It, like, can be something different.
To use a more contemporary example, this is probably a really bad one. I'm going to date myself, but it's fine. So, remember when The Matrix came out?
Yes.
And then Reloaded and the Revolutions movies came out. But in between, you know, the hype, they had a whole bunch of shit that they were doing. They did Enter the Matrix on fucking PlayStation 2 and whatever, and it sucked. But they also did the Animatrix, anime style vignettes, like 7 or 8 that were like, between 5 and 15 minutes long that were within the world of The Matrix. And some of them were very lighthearted. Some of them were, you know, a little bit more, somber and, you know, tragic and all that sort of thing. Is that what you're kind of looking for? If you were in, you know, like in an ideal situation as a Star Wars fan, as a fervent Star Wars fan?
I think so. I mean, this is like a serious... The only thing we know about, like, the background of this story is the line from the movie. You know, like, many Baltans died getting us this information. Like, this sounds like a heist movie, essentially, right? Like, these guys are breaking in. They're getting these Death Star plans. They're, you know, Rogue One Squadron, all this kind of stuff. Like, this is dark stuff. Like, we don't... Again, we don't need a Jar Jar Binks character in here. We don't need C-3PO and R2-D2. If it's got a little bit of lightheartedness in it, fine. But... I don't know. I think this, once again, we're not going to be able to go through a show without talking about it.
Right.
This goes back to Batman versus Superman. The studios are sort of freaking out because the
tone.
Big complaint about
tone.
That movie was the tone. Yeah. It was wrong for that movie. Doesn't mean it's wrong for every movie.
Right.
It was wrong for that movie. Doesn't even mean that you can't make a Batman versus Superman movie that has a dark tone and that it would be good. It just wasn't right for that movie.
Right. I just think it's very... It's just... odd. I've never heard when a movie is not doing well, then you hear about the principal actors. You hear, Kevin Costner is arguing with Julia Roberts or whatever. I'm just using it as an example. It doesn't necessarily make it true.
They're both assholes. We both know.
Right. But when you're talking about, hey, the second unit director and veteran stunt coordinator, Simon Crane, who's worked on the Bourne movies and this movie and that movie, he's being signed on. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I know.
Okay, well, apparently it's that big of a deal, but I also attribute it to what we, you know, touched on before when it comes to the promotion doesn't start just when the movie's being made when it's already made. It's even beforehand.
Years.
Everyone's got to know something about everything, blah, blah, blah. So.
Oh, the preview's already been out. The preview came out months ago, you know, for this movie that apparently 40% of it still is going to be reshot.
That fucking sucks.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's
now, but you're never going to see it.
Shows you how much bullshit marketing is.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But again, you're never going to see it, though. That's the shame.
Never going to see what? The original stuff?
Yeah.
Well, you never know. Well, no. I was going to say there's going to be a director's cut, but with Star Wars, they don't roll
no.
like that.
No. Disney's got their shit on fucking, like, tight to the point where I have many a friend, and you have many a friend, that do... you know, the cons. They do the cosplay, you know, dressing up as their favorite characters, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you and I have done the exact same thing, too. But Disney don't give a fuck about what you and I want to do. So they always want to, you know, get that goddamn $100 out of your wallet by any means necessary, Chris. And so if you want to have a real-life, officially licensed Lucasfilm/Disney replica of a prop lightsaber, guess how much is that going to set you back? Take a guess.
So it's like metal, and it's got the heft in your hand. Yes. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Now I preface all that by saying that it doesn't do anything above and beyond just being the hilt.
It's just
handle. There's no noises. There's no light that shines out, unlike some other modified.
Oh, shit, I got one of those.
Yeah. See, so and how much did you spend with that one?
It was a gift, but I think that it was like $75-$80.
$75-$80, okay. Yeah. So based on that, this is officially licensed.
Well, I know these are metal and they're officially licensed for Uber Nerd, so I would guess $350.
You're way off.
Well, I'm way low.
You're way, way low.
As with all things Disney, it's way more expensive than you think it's gonna be. $1,000?
$1,250.
Jesus.
$1,250 for a prop lightsaber. What else do we have? A limited edition of Darth Vader's melted helmet that Kylo Ren was looking at to say, I'm going to finish what you started, or whatever the fuck.
Limited edition.
limited edition of 500, by the way.
Unless we sell a bunch, and then we'll make more. so it's like the melted helmet that was sitting in kitty litter.
Yes. Very ashy. Ashy Larry, that's what they call him on the set.
Yeah. That helmet needed some cocoa butter.
Some shea butter.
Some cocoa butter. The fuck is cocoa butter? Mm. I don't know. Same price? $1,200? Something like that?
$3,500.
Jesus Christ!
A stormtrooper's helmet with the finger smear of blood against his visor.
So heavy-handed. No pun intended.
$1,750. Kylo Ren's helmet.
Kylo Ren's helmet.
Yeah.
No burns. No kitty litter.
No.
Two G's.
Two G's is right on. Oh, good for you.
Wow.
Poe Dameron's X-Wing.
Already pre-ordered mine.
Poe Dameron's X-Wing helmet.
Well, I can tell you the shipping and handling was $59.95.
Unless you got Prime, motherfucker.
Shit. What was the next one?
Poe Dameron's X-Wing helmet.
Poe Dameron's X-Wing helmet.
Yeah.
God, it sounds like some weird fucking Burt Reynolds movie from the 70s. Burt Reynolds and Poe Dameron's X-Wing helmet. I don't even remember what his fucking helmet looked like.
Oscar Isaac just dancing and Ex Machina style.
I'd pay
shit.
Money for that. Pay money for his beard from that movie.
How much would you pay for it?
Just the trimmings. So his X-Wing helmet. I don't know. That's got to be lower. That's got to be back to like the 1200 range, right?
What were you going to say? I feel like you were going to say another amount before you said 1200.
I was going to say 1300.
Okay. I was going to say if you said 1500, you'd be right on.
Okay.
A bunch of other shit, whatever.
Poe Dameron. What kind of a name is Poe Dameron? Where do they get these fucking names? Is no one in the galaxy named, like, Steve? You know, like...
Bob.
He's our greatest pilot. George. Wait, that's Lucas. That name's probably
Lloyd.
Off limits.
Lloyd! You're gonna save the planet or what? Lloyd.
Lloyd Christmas.
Lloyd Christmas.
Oh, so you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah! Speaking of chances.
Yeah.
So, remember a while back when you were talking about how I quote somewhat, I'm going to kick myself in the balls if I'm wrong about this movie being the biggest bomb of the summer. Mm. And you were talking about Duncan Jones' Warcraft.
Poor Duncan Jones. I was talking about Warcraft. I hate that we have to tie Duncan Jones in it.
Hey, listen. What wasn't it? I remember now. There was a Twitter fight. It sounds awful, right?
Yeah,
but there was a Twitter fight.
No, it's not awful. That's what our potential president gets involved in.
True.
Twitter fights.
Very sad.
Yeah.
Not good.
Not good.
Point.
Bad.
Ryan Jones, and Duncan Jones were Ryan Johnson and Duncan Jones were getting into a Twitter fight over, well, you're making the new Star Wars, so you sold out. Well, guess what? You're making a movie for a video game that came out at the peak of its popularity seven years ago.
But it was, like, playful, right? Like, wasn't it playful? I think it was.
I didn't hear anything about it since then, so I'm guessing it was.
I got the sense that it was playful, but I do remember that. It was a long Twitter back and forth between the two of them.
It was at least notorious enough to have you and I remember it, but all I know is that I don't think Rian Johnson is doing...
Rian Johnson is making episode 8. Yes.
Okay. Goddamn you that episode 8 is not going to be compared to Battlefield Earth, because that is exactly what Warcraft is being compared to now as the Battlefield Earth of the 21st century.
Yes, I was right. It looked bad from the previews and from everything we're reading in the last week. It's even worse than it looks.
At a time when films of this scale are defined by safety and defenestrated... Jesus, really? That word? Good by God. Compromise. Universal went all in on a summer movie so niche and nerdy that it makes Willow look like Lord of the Rings and Lord of the Rings look like Masterpiece Theater.
Just watched Willow this morning.
Did you really?
Yes. Well, watched half of it last night. Kids fell asleep. Watched the other half of it this morning. Holds up, motherfucker. Val Kilmer. Hell yeah.
We're going to talk about him.
Back then it was like, Val Kilmer, take your shirt off. Now it's like, Val Kilmer, put your fucking shirt back on.
Bill Cromer, stop eating your shirt.
Val Kilmer, seriously, get out of the fridge. You just ate.
He's having ice cream for breakfast like Russell Crowe is.
Poor Val Kilmer. Aww. I like Val Kilmer so much.
But, this movie, I haven't read one good thing about it.
No.
Not one redeeming quality. It's boring. It takes itself way too seriously. The fucking fangs on Paula Patton looks terrible.
I mean, they're going into every bit about it. The acting, the story, the script, the direction, the CGI. Of all the things to get to fuck up in a movie like this, the CGI they're shitting on.
Yeah.
Oof. I kind of want to see it more now. Like,
how much do you think it's going to make?
Oh, God. You know, this thing does...
Domestically.
This thing does still have, you know, like, a certain amount of nerds in its pocket that play WoW, and they'll go see it. So that's going to give it a little bit of money, but that's not going to make it... That's not going to do anything.
$5 million right now. Based on the article and...
what, the predictions that it's going to make
money? No. Oh, that our friend Brian Castaneda had
Woody
said
Allen
that...
movies opened up higher than
I think as of last year, they still had 5 million active World of Warcraft players.
That's a lot, though, right?
5 million's a lot.
Yeah, I don't know video games and, like, what's a lot, but that feels like a lot. I mean, there's, like, 300 million people in the United States.
Well, I mean, look, you have to figure this, is that if you're playing, like, it's one thing to, like, actually buy the game, you know, like Grand Theft Auto or, like, one of those games that just, like, sells crazy amounts and ships crazy amounts, too. But if you're talking about, you have to get the interest of your players invested for this long. Now, World of Warcraft's been around since...
Long time.
It feels like it's been around since
early
like
the 2000s.
The early aughts. Yeah. Okay, so now you're talking about some shit that's still, you know, has enough interest to make a movie, terrible as it may be.
Like, what other video games from that era are still relevant?
Online, number two. Number three, you know, you've got it's a fucking tentpole movie, you know, you're talking about that.
A lot of money.
But 5 fucking million people that are still playing this shit that they could very easily have lost interest and gone on to the next distraction, like fucking this or that movie, or that game, rather.
Yes. But a lot of those people that play the game, they play it because that's their form of relaxation, video games. And they get home and they play this game and they love it, they get lost in that world. That doesn't necessarily translate into those people saying, I love this story so much that I'm going to go see the movie, especially if it's got bad reviews. However, some of it will.
Right.
So it'll still make some money. I can't see it making more than like 20 million on opening weekend.
Man, 20?
Yeah. Tops.
Maybe 10.
You're gonna go 10?
15. I'll lowball 15. Yeah. Look, if you are listening to this podcast, we appreciate your patronage. Follow us on the UMP on MLR and tweet us how much you think it's going to make opening weekend, because it does open up June 10th. I would be really interested in finding out if anybody that's an actual World of Warcraft fan still follows this shit to the point where, like, I'm all about this movie. I'm gonna watch it no matter what. I don't care.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are some. Yeah. But I think that this is sort of representative of what else is going on in movie culture right now, which is people are just a little bit tired of this kind of shit. Like, they're just really getting a little bit tired of the wall-to-wall action, fantasy superhero type stuff that's been going on for like ages now. That's why people are responding to stuff like Jungle Book and Zootopia and things like that.
Okay, well, with that being said, that's a good segue into the first of our many reviews tonight, because we watched a fuck ton of movies, by the way.
We saw some movies.
We saw some goddamn movies, and one of the ones that we've been talking about forever, and we finally were able to see this weekend, thanks to the Chinese democracy and because of...
The interwebs.
I don't condone using torrents, but fucking use torrents. We watched Midnight Special.
Midnight Special, the new Jeff Nichols movie. Love Jeff Nichols. And about the, you know, like, the taking of movies from the internet, we were just talking about it a little while ago. Here's the thing. Get your fucking shit together, Hollywood. Because if you would have made this movie available to me, I would have paid for it. Like, if it had shown in the theater anywhere near where I live, it really did.
No, we were talking about it.
It wasn't anywhere near us. Okay, fine. I don't need to go to the theater. Then make it, give us a on-demand option. I buy movies on-demand all the time. Like, when things are available to me in the regular way, I will purchase them. I will give you money for them. But if you have this little independent movie that you're only showing in, like, 20 cities across the United States, and you don't make it available on-demand to me, and then it does come available, yeah, it's pretty hard for me to fucking say no. It's like, you know, if my wife is not fucking me for a year, that's fine. That's fine. I can deal with
cool.
that.
That's cool. cool.
I can deal with that. Yeah. I mean, I don't like it.
Yeah.
But then if I get some other pussy thrown in my face, it's like, okay, what this plus that, it's like, you know what? You can see where this
How
is going.
Can you deny those deals, son?
How can you deny those deals?
Yeah.
No. So anyway, yeah, I fucking stole it.
Okay. I want to know your opinion of it first, because I know that you're a huge Jeff Nichols fan, and I honestly only got into him because of you, because you were suggesting that, hey, you need to watch Take Shelter, you need to watch Shotgun Stories, which I watched.
Yeah.
Also very good.
Liked it. Yeah.
And
Mud.
Yeah. And Mud as well. But Midnight Special was kind of like, it's supposed to be his breakout one. It didn't make bank at the box office. It was a...
Felt very much like a small Jeff Nichols movie.
Oh, of course.
Me.
Yeah, because he's using the same actors that he's used before in his other movies.
Yeah, and it's not World of Warcraft, you know what I mean? He didn't off and make something like that.
But yeah, tell me your thoughts.
Liked it very, very much. Like you said, the movie starts with the intrigue and the like intent tone. Like, immediately, as soon as you start watching it.
And not pandering to you, either. It's not giving every single thing away. What I was looking at was like...
It's not giving anything away.
What the fuck am I... What? Oh, okay, now I want to know what's going on. Yeah. And that's 7.5 minutes into the movie.
And it feeds you little crumbs here and there to keep you interested in the story, you know? It builds characters. It's got a great, great score. It really does feel like one of the movies from our childhood. There's a lot of comparisons to the John Carpenter movies, specifically Starman, and some other movies like that. And those comparisons are apt, and that's what it feels like. It feels like a sort of throwback to the adventure sci-fi movies of the 80s, you know?
Well, it almost felt like when you're watching it, it gives you enough to work with without making you feel stupid, number one, which is very important to me because I'm a very dumb man. But also number two is that it's understandable that, you know, like, you want to find out, because the characters in the movie are finding out just in real time as you are.
Yes.
And it's not, you know, like a thing. Like, you could probably guess, but you're probably not going to hit it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, you could guess. It's nothing crazy, the sort of things that you're waiting to find out.
Yeah.
But it could be any number of things.
Right.
And some of these characters are so taken with this kid. First of all, if you don't know, I mean, it's basically a movie about a kid who has a very special gift, and he's being sheltered by his father and his father's friend, who is a state trooper, who has only just met the boy within the last 24 hours.
Right, and when you find out that he is a state trooper, it's like, oh, shit, because there's something
happened
beforehand, something right?
Happened.
You caught that?
Okay. And that's what the movie does. Like, it, like, feeds you these little crumbs, and some of the crumbs don't just tell you what's going to happen in the future. Some of the crumbs sort of remind you about things that have already happened in the movie, like that one that you're talking about.
Right.
So that's Joel Edgerton that plays the highway trooper. Of course, Michael Shannon is the dad. The young actor, I don't know what his name is, but he's tremendous. Kirsten Dunst is in it. Sam Shepard is in it.
And Joe Don Baker's in it. Yeah, he's the FBI. Oh shit! Fucking Adam.
Adam Driver is in it, in a great role as an NSA agent. There's a lot of people going after this kid. You know, I mean, they sort of came from a cult. So his father's protecting him. This cult is after him. The FBI is after him, and Adam Driver plays a guy from the NSA who's also interested in him for many, many reasons. To give away any of those reasons would really spoil the intrigue of the movie.
Yeah.
Suffice it to say that I loved it. I was reading a review earlier today about the movie from a guy I like, and he was saying, you know, Nichols doesn't quite stick the landing here. Like, it's really, it's a great performance, but he doesn't stick the landing, and I think that's true. I don't think the landing is completely stuck.
As far as the ending is concerned.
I feel about it pretty much the way I felt about Interstellar, Chris Nolan's Interstellar. It's like, the ending doesn't quite work for me, but the movie was so fucking good, I don't care. You know, like, I don't care.
God, there was a lot of crying in that fucking movie.
Yeah, well...
But it's, you know, like, I'll take Nolan's worst with, you know, like, I'll take the Pepsi fucking challenge with Interstellar with any other movie that I've seen, you know, last, like, 5 or 6 years. Because,
Michael Shannon is, like... I mean, seriously, like, you talk about guys that you could watch read the phone book. Like, as a matter of fact, I kind of want to see Michael Shannon read the phone book.
Right.
That, like, grimace face, but also very touching. Like, and that's what's great about Michael Shannon. He can also, you know, he's an intense guy, but he can be very, very touching. He really is the Chris Walken of our generation, I think. Like,
yeah, his portrayal of Alton's dad, because he's Roy.
He's Roy.
Roy is Alton's dad in the movie, and he's just, you know, like, almost the concept of just absolute sacrifice for his boy that he hasn't really known, because he's let somebody else raise him for 2 years, and, you know, it gets in that whole thing. But I do absolutely agree with what you're saying, is that, man, you don't really need to move that many things on your face. And meanwhile, you can convey like 25 goddamn emotions that I could never, ever convey.
Because, exactly.
like, you've got that shit. Like, it almost liken it to method acting.
Yeah.
But it's not. It just feels like so easy to him. And we've seen him in other things before. Like, he's been fucking creepy as shit.
Oh, yeah.
He's been like...
Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, like overtly grandiose, like, acting! You know, like, he's in Man of Steel and shit.
Man of Steel, yep. He can play straight up evil. And then in this, that's not the case. He's just sort of protecting his child. He knows that he doesn't even completely understand what's happening with his child, but he knows that he needs to help him to accomplish something.
Yeah.
And it's really, really touching, especially one of the scenes towards the end. That's why when I say the end doesn't work, it's not like nothing in the end works. It's sort of the reveal for me doesn't totally work, but there's still things that are happening. They've made such... strides with character development and things like that.
That's it.
Yeah,
like that's kind of what you feel like. I'd give it like a solid 3.5, 4 stars out of 5. Like fuck, I wish you could have gotten the Langan, but man, like that was a really good fucking ride. And plus the fact that you don't have to have, like you were mentioning before, like you don't have to have a fucking barrage of explosions.
Yeah,
just, you know, like just completely like, you know, pistol whipping your face at all times. Like you can have like certain, you know, scenes of calm and, you know, like, we're fucking collecting ourselves, you know, like, from this fucking crazy-ass experience. Like, what the fuck is going on?
Right.
And you're there, right there, with the fucking characters and everything, and
The movie takes some beats to build those characters and build some tension and some intrigue. And then you also get some scenes of excitement and some scenes of real action, you know? Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't think it from a small indie movie like this, but it does, like, and it's sort of jarring when it happens.
Yeah,
you know?
Pretty well made. So, I'm so fucking glad that I got to finally see the movie.
Yeah, me too. Jeff Nichols, I just can't wait. Like, and that's the thing you walk away from this kind of movie thinking. It's very much how I felt about Robert Eggers walking away from The Witch. It's not so much that Midnight Special is an amazing movie, although I would recommend people see it.
Of course.
It's mostly... holy shit, I just want this guy to make another movie yesterday.
Yeah, I want you to be successful. I want you to keep doing the things, because it made $8 million and had a budget of $20 million, but I mean, it's going to have a significant following. Like, everybody was ranting and raving about it.
Yes.
So
it's the same way I felt about Duncan Jones after Moon and Source Code. I'm like, holy fuck, this guy needs to make something else right
now. Yeah, and now Jeff Nichols, I think, is slated to direct the Tetris trilogy that we were talking about in the last podcast.
God, I would kill myself. Good God.
So that came out, and we were not able to watch until, you know, obviously this past time on the Untitled Movie Podcast on morelikeradio.com. However, we were also able to watch Hail Caesar.
Yep, saw Hail Caesar.
The Coen Brothers movie.
Yes.
Which is, you know, kind of like a throwback, old-timey movie, you would almost say, like likening to the glitz and the glamour, the culture of 1950s Hollywood, where, you know, like brash productions and, you know, like movie stars were movie stars and men were men and women were women, et cetera, et cetera. And you've got Josh Brolin,
yes,
in a role as a producer of a movie studio that is basically like a cleaner. He's
Eddie Mannix, real guy.
Yeah, oh, is he really?
Yeah, Eddie Mannix was a real guy.
Oh, shit.
He's
so
sort of a fixer.
Well, is Baird Whitlock a real guy?
I don't know that Baird Whitlock was a real guy. Maybe he wasn't. I just never heard of him. But,
So the aforementioned movie Hail Caesar is being made, and Baird Whitlock, who is played by George Clooney, who is the main character, the main actor in that movie, gets kidnapped. Hilarity ensues.
Yes.
You know, we go from there. But what did you think of it?
Yeah, I wish more hilarity had ensued. Oh. No, I mean, the movie is like sort of a love letter to the golden age of cinema and sort of those musicals from the 40s and 30s, 40s, 50s.
Yeah.
And it works. It's not, like, it's amusing. That's how I felt about the movie. Like, I enjoyed watching it. It is amusing.
Yeah.
It is entertaining to a certain degree. It does not, it's quite a bit of a mess. It doesn't, sort of, there's a lot of characters that pop up, and you see them for a split second.
Like Jonah Hill,
but even Scarlett Johansson, and that story is not completed at all.
Right.
Channing Tatum, also kind of same thing, yeah. Like, sort of the reverse of that. You don't get enough of him, okay. And then all of a sudden he's kind of a major character that you didn't know. Maybe I just wasn't paying close enough attention or something like that, but well, there's a lot of stories that are kind of abandoned.
Now, I was stoned when I was watching this movie, so I do have to preface that. I do think, and I am going to stand by my statement that I made, that I believe that if you give this movie 10 years, it will be remembered as Lebowski would, The Big Lebowski, which is also another Coen Brothers
movie. That is such a bold statement.
But I think it's not necessarily because of, you know, like, oh my gosh, it's so funny, or because, oh, it was adopted by the Stoners and all that type of thing. I just think that just based on how it, and it does a really good job of kind of paying an homage to, you know, the golden age of, you know, movies and the synchronized swimming.
Totally.
And the fucking musical portions of the movie that, you know, like, you're finding out, like, holy shit, this guy can sing and dance and, like, do all this stuff at the same time.
Yes, but don't those, the sort, and that's kind of what I mean. Like, yeah, these characters and these actors and these storylines and even these scenes, like the Channing Tatum, all the gay sailors dancing, in the bar. That doesn't that kind of not fit? It's the movie is this weird amalgam of scenes that don't, like, this weird, like, hodgepodge mosaic of scenes that don't all quite go together. It doesn't totally matter. Like I say, it's kind of entertaining and amusing anyway.
Right.
But they don't all sort of work together. Like that scene with Channing Tatum or the Busby Berkeley scene with Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
What is the point of any of that?
I don't know. Listen, I'm not disagreeing with you. I acknowledge fully that it is a weird movie. Like, it's like The Man Who Wasn't There weird, because, like, even parts of that movie are just like, what?
That movie's brilliant, by the way.
It is very brilliant.
I love that movie.
See? There you go.
Now,
I feel like we're going to be talking about this shit now when Hail Caesar comes in, like, you know, 2016.
I have no doubt that the movie is 100%.
2016.
Yeah.
What?
I have no doubt that the movie we will talk about the movie further, and it's the kind of movie that will benefit from a second viewing.
Yeah,
doubtlessly, but Lebowski is just a really, really tall bar to reach in terms of cult status, in terms of people talking about it later when it came out.
Well, I mean, that's my hope. I'm not saying that it is actually going to happen, because people change, cultures change, like, people don't really talk about, you know what, here's the other thing, too, is that I'm watching this movie, it's good, there's a ton of people in it, and yet, I'm thinking to myself, this isn't their best movie, but I'm still watching it out of necessity, because, you know, like, you want to watch the P.T. Anderson, David Fincher, Coen Brothers movie, and all that type of thing.
Coen Brothers make something I see it sight unseen, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so, when you're looking at a Coen Brothers movie that isn't man, fucking like No Country for Old Men, for example. Like, and they've made a few movies since then.
Oh,
and
yeah. Several.
So, you know, like, when you think about it, it's almost kind of like, you know, like, you're kind of gauging it from the height of their powers, so to speak.
Right.
And, like, if there's, like, a complete drop-off with, you know, movie, music, entertainment, people of that nature. Am I making any sense?
Yes, you are. The movie, it doesn't quite, it's not as great as the sum of its parts.
Right.
And so, for them and me, it falls into the same category as something like Intolerable Cruelty or Burn After Reading. Both perfectly fine, enjoyable, amusing movies.
Right. Lady Killers.
Lady Killers falls into a different category for me. Oh. Lady Killers falls into a bad movie.
Is it really?
Tough to watch. Yeah, like, tough to watch. And it's unfortunate because Tom Cruise is giving a very funny performance. Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Well, Tom Cruise needs to do it. Coen Brothers movie.
He does need to do a Coen Brothers movie. Man, he's fucking manic enough in order to actually do it.
He is, and he can be super funny.
Yeah.
I stumbled across that.
Tropic Thunder, man.
But no, this falls into that category for me. It does have a couple of scenes that are laugh out loud funny. Like, as a matter of fact, it might have one scene that is the funniest, the hardest I've laughed in the last year in the movie theater, which is the scene between Ralph Fiennes and
Ehrenreich.
Gesundheit. That scene between the two of them, and if you've seen the movie, you'll know exactly which scene I'm talking about. That it were true.
It's complicated.
That scene made me laugh so fucking hard. Way harder than I've laughed at anything else recently. Okay. And I will tell you, that kid...
Dude, okay, look. I'm watching this movie. I know what we both know.
Yeah.
We have talked about...
It's half the reason I saw the movie.
Alden Ehrenreich is going to be the new Han Solo in the Phil Lord, Chris Miller Han Solo Star Wars Redux. And it felt like... A fucking audition for a Han Solo.
It's
and you're
funny
like,
you say man,
he can fucking sing, he can fucking dance, he does the goddamn lasso trick.
It's funny you say audition, because when I heard that he was going to be Han Solo,
yeah.
I was thinking, and I might have even said on this show, like, I gotta see that audition tape. How did he win that part over? And
yeah.
I think you're right. I think this was the audition tape, because you watch this movie, first of all, you can't take your eyes off him when he's on screen, because he does have... Real charisma.
He's got juice.
But he's also super fucking talented. Like, he's funny as shit.
Yeah, he's got good comic timing.
Everything.
He's got fucking talent. He can goddamn sing and play goddamn guitar. And he does the fucking lasso trick.
Right. Ralph Fiennes basically playing the exact same character that he played in the Wes Anderson movie that everyone likes so much when he played the, you know, bellhop or whatever.
Oh, the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, essentially playing it's the same, like, same kind of, like,
okay,
debonair Britishman comic timing thing. And then you've got this sort of, like, Roy Rogers character playing up against him, and it is fucking hysterical.
It's really fucking funny. Watch him, like, if there were, I don't know, not best supporting actor, you know, Oscar nomination or consideration, but just like, hey, listen, you should watch these movies, not because of the principal characters or the actors in the movies, but you should watch because of, like, the secondary people, and this would be one of those movies that you would watch.
Yes, and not only that, but the Oscars should have a award for best scene, because there is something to that, you know? Like, it doesn't have to be best movie or best performance. There's something to creating a scene, and this is not the best movie. And it does not have the best performances.
Yeah.
But that scene is a masterclass in comic timing and comic delivery. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's really good. Like, I think the MTV Movie Awards actually have that, and so we're kind of giving credence to that. It's fine, whatever. You know what? One of the first Best Picture of the Year awards they gave out was Seven.
Yeah. They are frequently more right... Or as right as the Academy Awards.
In fact, I think David Fincher even said when he was accepting the award, you know, people always talking to have always, like, mentioned to me that Seven is an MTV movie, and he said, well, what's wrong with that? And then he, like, walked off the stage and everything. So
yeah, what is wrong with that? That's the thing about the Academy Awards. They don't recognize genre. They rarely recognize comedy, extremely rarely.
Right.
Horror, action, adventure.
Well,
they don't recognize those.
Again.
Like, it's got to be Anthony Hopkins and Emma Thompson in a fucking room.
Well, you know, again,
as much as I like that.
As I would point out, courtesy of our mutual friend, Brian Castaneda, that the Academy Awards were invented to basically legitimize cinema, because back in the day, the cinema was considered, you know, just, you know, like, trash entertainment right. And all that type of thing. And so, yeah, well, I mean, maybe you should change it up. Not add from 5 to 10 nominees for Best Picture, but at least like Best Scene, because that's a very good idea, actually.
Yeah, because they went from 5 to 10, and it's like, okay, 5 boring movies no one's ever heard of, and now it's going to be 9 boring movies that no one's ever heard of. You know?
Here's the other movie that we both saw. And it was actually very funny because, full disclosure, ladies and gentlemen, that, you know, not only do we do podcasts and, we've known each other for many years, but on occasion we are able to hang out. And so, Chris and his wife Keisha went out to go to dinner over at a local restaurant, and I'm texting, hey, yeah, so we're going to go blah, blah, blah. Hey, we're at this, let's fucking hang out. Let's fucking drink. Let's fucking do this shit. So we went over to the restaurant. We hung out with them. I had a martini that was just, like, it didn't taste like alcohol, which was probably a bad idea because
you drank it in one sip.
Yeah, it was really great. And so then we went to, you know, have some tapas or whatever, more drinks, and then we went to go see The Nice Guys.
The Nice Guys. Directed by Shane Black. Movie with Russell Crowe and Gosling.
Yeah, so tell me your thoughts on that. Hold on a second. I'm going to get a drink, so hold on.
I thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, Russell Crowe is not known for his comic timing. Ryan Gosling, not known for his comic timing. But they have incredible presence together. The two of them are really, really good on screen together. They have great chemistry. A lot of funny moments in the movie. And Shane Black gives them a lot of really good dialogue. The movie is not like... It's nothing special other than that. It's like really funny dialogue. That's Mark's beer you're hearing. He dropped it on the floor.
I apologize.
But he's drinking it anyway. He's now lapping at it like a cat.
There's a dent in the can. I'm sorry.
No, but the movie was fun. Like, it's pretty tough to sit through it and not laugh. Gosling in particular, who I've never been, like, the biggest fan of, this movie has turned Gosling around for me.
Gosling
that sounded
is
super gay, but
really, really, really hilarious in this movie. Like, yeah. He's really good. Also, you did point out numerous times, but I will point it out to the listeners of the Untitled Movie Podcast on morelikeradio.com that Russell Crowe looks like he's been eating breakfast for ice cream for breakfast for the last 3 months because he's...
Russell Crowe and Val Kilmer look like they're on the same diet. Yeah.
Isn't that sad?
It is. I mean, it's fine. Like, I don't care. Russell Crowe is still... It works. He's supposed to be this big, imposing, intimidating figure in the movie.
Yeah.
And he is, and it works, and it's still very funny. And he is very funny. Russell Crowe, I hate to just talk about Gosling, but Crowe's got some really great moments in this movie, too. And a little bit more of a straight man. He's kind of playing the straight man. So much so that, like, it's so much straight and funny man that Gosling actually is doing some Abbott and Costello stuff at one point. He's like, you know...
They're closing the elevator doors.
Closing the elevator doors. And when he finds the body, you know, and he's like, you know, doing that. I mean, that's, like, clearly a nod to Abbott and Costello.
I do want to mention that when we went...
It's a fun buddy cop movie.
When we went to go see this this movie, and I do agree that it is a fun buddy cop movie. It's very, very good. Gosling's got chops. Crow's, you know, good as a straight man. But we did not like it as much as the lady that was sitting to theater left, like 3 or 4 rows up, just cackling to the gods that I must enjoy this movie.
So obnoxious.
Yeah.
I don't know why people have to be like that.
To the point where I guess your wife had said, like, oh, just let her enjoy it. Just let her enjoy the movies and whatever.
Someone could be, like, you know, like waving a machete around the back of the theater, and my wife would be like, it's fine. That's how she enjoys it. That's fine.
Slightly distracting. Slightly distracting.
I thought it was a little much.
When I was watching it, but, you know,
which
whatever.
Which is, again, why you should put your movies on demand.
Yeah.
You know, like, how often would you buy a movie that was on demand for, you know, say, $20? Brand new movie. I'm not talking about indie movie. I'm talking about, you know, something like Deadpool. Deadpool comes out. You can watch it at your house for $20.
I'd do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I totally do. Like, I don't want to fucking care. I don't give a shit to worry about, like, you don't have to worry about quality. You don't have to worry about some, like, fucking norovirus bullshit, like, infecting your goddamn computer to, like, just, like, completely, you know, useless anymore.
Like, it's on there and then it's gone.
I want to pay for stuff that I like. Like, that's
I want to
fucking, like, throw money at shit that I fucking like
that's
so that they can keep doing things that I like. Jeff Nichols would have released this shit for like $10. Like, you know, we were talking about this shit before. Oh, we're like, totally, I don't want to drive to fucking Brandon at 6 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday goddamn afternoon.
I would have paid way more than $10 to see it.
Yeah, fuck, man. Like, yeah. It just fucking sucks. And so, you know, like...
I don't have 5 hours to, you know, like, get out of my day. Like, I have, like, 2 hours at the end of the night.
Yeah.
I can pay for your movie then, or, oh, I can spend 5 hours, I can drive an hour and a half away, watch a 2-hour movie, drive another hour and a half back. No, I don't have that kind of time.
Yeah.
But you make it available to me, I will buy it.
Yeah, for example, so this weekend, my vacation, my fucking vacation, ladies and gentlemen, by the way, like,
Mark's drunk. He wants to go on vacation.
I can't stress enough how much I love the fact that I don't have to go to work for 17 goddamn days in the world.
17? Holy crap.
I'm going to fucking murder someone, Chris, but now it's down to 15, but that's fine. So we went to... Friday night, we went to go to St. Pete. We were going to go see Weird Al Yankovic, which we did at the Mahaffey Theater, which was fantastic. Go see him. I sound like a nerd, but I don't give a fuck. Get your own goddamn podcast. White and nerdy.
White-ish.
But before we did that, we went to the movie theater because we went to go see Popstar. Mm. Because I want to give the Lonely Island money to do funny shit, because everything that they've released is at least halfway funny, if not like completely funny. Like, all their music albums and their fucking...
Digital shorts on
SNL. The digital shorts on SNL when they were still on there. They've done Hot Rod. They've done, a couple of other things like that. They've even done that... did you see that HBO thing that they did, 7 Days in Hell?
Yes, very funny. With Jon Snow.
With Kit Harington. Holy balls. If you haven't seen that yet, go see that.
Very funny. Yes, I liked it a lot.
Popstar was... funny.
It was
in spots very, very funny. It wasn't as abstract as I thought it was going to be, but it did have its moments. There's one, actually, and I'll tell you what, spoilers if you don't want to spoil yourself. You're already 49 minutes in, so who gives a shit? But what I would say is that if you're going to have like R-rated raunchy comedy,
which I like, I love that.
Yeah, and if you're going to have, like, shit that is going to, you know, like, oh, make people feel uncomfortable and all that type of thing, like, I'm all about, like, hey, listen, titties and ass, whatever, I'm totally about, like, yes, bring on the naked women, all that stuff, but there is nothing funnier than a fucking flaccid penis just, like, smearing itself all over a fucking limo window, because that's the shit that fucking happens during this movie, and it is fucking goddamn funny as fuck.
It's not very clever, but it is effective.
It is very... I mean, fart jokes aren't exactly clever either, but I will laugh at a goddamn fart joke.
No,
I mean,
that's what you... You don't go to see this movie for clever.
No. I mean, there's a couple of things in there that are clever.
I'm sure.
And there's a lot of fucking cameos.
But these guys made Dick in a Box, for God's sake.
Yeah,
you know?
There's...
Although that is also... That's raunchy and it is a little clever. You know?
Yeah, and there's way too many cameos that I don't want to mention to you.
I know, I was looking at that on IMDb. Holy crap.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot.
That's
and
crazy.
And it works out. Like, it's, you know, like, it gets, you can almost tell how it's going to end as it goes along. Like, okay, and there's this happened, and there's this person that had to do this.
It hits all the beats, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like... and that may actually be kind of the joke within the joke, is that, like, hey, okay, so you know the beats to the movie about the pop star that we're talking about right now. Blah! You know, like, stuff like that shit. Yeah, fuck it. You know, Lonely Island's funny, and this may not even be something that they continue to do, because it made $5 million this weekend on a budget of $20 million. It's probably not going to make its money back. Unless you do, like, DVD, Blu-ray sales, and on demand, by the way. Yeah. You know, like, I would totally fucking bought it on demand.
Yeah, DVD, Blu-ray sales, I don't think you can depend on those that much anymore. And this is not
really.
This is not the kind of movie that's going to get international money. So they'll probably lose some money. But, you know, I feel like these guys are going to hit with a really successful movie at some point. Like,
yeah, or if they're not doing it themselves, like, if they're not the ones that are, like, front and center themselves, then they're going to be the ones that write the script.
Yes.
Or, you know, have, like, executive producer or creative influence.
Somehow involved. Like, you get that, like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine type
humor. Yeah, exactly.
Into a movie, and it'll be very successful.
Yeah. By the way, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I was telling somebody the other day, like, I've only seen, like, a couple of episodes, but every single time that I do, super funny.
I love it.
Have you seen Angie Tribeca?
I saw the first episode of Angie Tribeca.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I thought it was funny. Very Naked Gun.
Very Naked Gun.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know, like, I know when the show came out, a lot of people were going crazy about it, and I'm curious to know if people are watching it every week and liking it every week, or if that joke is getting old. You know what I mean? Because, like, with Leslie Nielsen, for instance, like, he made those kind of movies for 15 years, and it just sort of got old to people. Like, they didn't... The first Naked Gun is genius. And
would you rather watch that, or... Fuck, I don't know, the Kardashians, or like... I've never seen the Kardashians.
God, no, I've never seen it either.
Never seen the fucking Hills, never saw the goddamn Kardashians, never saw the fucking House Bunnies, or whatever the bullshit.
Never saw that, never saw Honey Boo Boo, or any of that kind of stuff.
I don't give a fuck.
No, not interested.
Yeah, that's not our charge. So, when we were done talking about how we saw The Nice Guys, I also had remembered that you had recommended to me that, hey, listen, you need to watch, you know, some of the things that Shane Black has been involved in, and he directed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which I saw last night. Thank you, by the way. Excellent recommendation as far
better,
as you're concerned.
Better movie than The Nice Guys, in my
opinion. I was going to say, like, way, way better.
Yeah. Nice Guys is very funny and very entertaining, but...
This was, like, a better version of it.
Yeah, this is, like, got kind of a clever script, and you don't exactly know where it's going to go and all that kind of stuff. And it does have Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer, who's, you know, underused.
Yeah, and this was the movie that Robert Downey Jr. did before he started getting into Iron Man and the Avengers and the Marvel comic universe, right?
Yeah, I think sort of after he got cleaned up, like, we would see him in things like U.S. Marshals.
Zodiac.
And, Zodiac... Yeah, I was going to say name a bunch of shitty movies that we would see him in, but Zodiac's fucking genius.
Yeah.
We'd see him like U.S. Marshals and In Dreams and things like
that.
In
Dreams.
You know, he was like in like these supporting parts. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang was the first time I think that we got to see him back in kind of a leading role and a decent leading role.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was really good, and I would not be able to do the plot justice. All I can say is that there's a lot of fourth wall breaking going on. So if you like Deadpool, you should watch this movie. There's a lot of, you know, obviously like Robert Downey Jr. charisma. You know, you can see kind of how, you know, you would want to see him in other roles besides Tony Stark.
Yes,
if you were to watch this movie.
That's how I feel about it. Like, I thought he was perfect for Tony Stark, and now it's been, in what, 6-7 movies? Like,
yeah.
Let's do a little bit more Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It's like a modern-day noir detective story.
Yeah. Yeah, which is funny because that's kind of along the lines of what the plot goes into from not just one of the authors of the... Well, anyway, you should just...
It's very meta, very self-aware.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So,
but in a good way, not in a, you know, like ridiculous,
schmaltzy way.
Annoying way.
Yeah. Val Kilmer's great. Michelle Monaghan is the chick.
Smoking hot, yeah.
Yeah, and then also, the fuck is his name from L.A. Law?
Corbin Burnson.
Corbin Burnson's in
it,
yeah.
Yep. Yeah, good cast, and Shane Black, good writer.
Shane Black is good.
Evidenced by this movie, and also The Nice Guys. And also, you know, Iron Man 3, not terrible. I liked Iron Man 3.
I liked Iron Man 3, it was alright. Yeah, it was pretty good.
Now you know what he's making now, right?
He is making Predators.
Making a Predator movie.
Fuck yeah, and he's getting, like, all the old gear back, like, he's like, this is gonna be fucking badass.
Well,
and...
you know his connection with Predator, though, right?
Joel Silver?
No. He's Hawkins from the original Predator. That is Shane Black.
Who's Hawkins?
Hawkins is the guy who's like,
tells,
you know,
tells
the jokes.
Is that Shane Black?
Jeez, you got a big pussy.
Jeez, you got a big pussy.
That's Shane. Anytime.
Yeah. That's Hawkins? That's fucking Shane Black?
That is Shane Black.
God damn it. Yeah. Oh, you just fucking blew my mind.
Yeah, no.
Not the same way that, what's his name, had his mind blown, like, from the fucking, like...
Oh, Bill Duke.
Yeah.
Anytime. Yeah, no, that is Shane Black.
Holy shit.
He was Hawkins in Predator.
Que como dices... Please. ¿Qué dices, mujer?
Please!
It's la selva de Javier!
Please!
Speaking of old school old school shit, as we wrap up the Untitled Movie Podcast on morelikeradio.com, I'm actually going to try to get as close to an hour as possible, but I know you love this movie as much as I do, okay?
Okay.
And
I'm interested.
We are very fortunate to still be around where we can actually remember, you know, the first time that we actually got to see this movie and the shit fucking... This movie is the reasons why I fucking hate Nazis. I fucking hate those guys. Why religion may possibly be real, just based on the Ark of the Covenant, because shit goes down. And that if you have a bag of sand... It's not a bad thing, like the 40-year-old virgin Steve Carell would say. Like, it's actually very, very good if you're Indiana Jones, because you're Raider of the Lost Ark. And Raiders of the Lost Ark, it's 35th anniversary.
It's crazy.
Chris?
Well, I'm 35 years old, so that's about right.
That's right? So I'm going to be turning 37 years old this September. And
whoa, old man.
Yeah, right? So
you're going to look like you drank from the wrong grail.
You have chosen... poorly. So, yeah.
Not Raiders, but still.
Right. But,
this movie holds up like a motherfucker. Still one of the greatest movies ever made.
Didn't you say that originally when Steven Spielberg was pitching this as far as a concept, that George Lucas was the one that said, don't do a spy movie. You need to do a serial, like a 1920s serial adventure movie.
Spielberg wanted to make a spy movie. More specifically, he was toying with the idea of making a James Bond movie.
Oh, shit.
Spielberg was. And Lucas and he were, of course, close friends, as everyone knows. And they got together and made this movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Originally wanted Tom Selleck.
Oh, that's right, but he couldn't get out of his contract because he was still with CBS and Magnum PI, and so they got this 30-year-old carpenter named...
Fuck it, we'll go with Han Solo.
It's fucking Harrison Ford.
Yep, so, I mean, the movie is, like I said, one of the greatest movies of all time. Got a ton of really good actors in it. Ton of actors, like, who are so amazing in it, but you never saw them in anything else. Like, the one Nazi with the circular glasses, you know?
Yeah. And then, Belloc.
Yes, I know you will.
Ronald Lacey, that's his name.
Yeah.
As, Arnold Taut.
Yeah. Belloc you have seen before, you just don't know it, because he's covered in so much makeup that you wouldn't recognize it. You know who Belloc was in? Belloc was one of the main villains from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers show.
What?
Yeah, he was one of famous sort of, you look at a picture of him dressed up like the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Ivan Ooze,
yeah.
Motherfucker.
Which is who, to bring it full circle, everyone said that Oscar Isaac looked like in the Apocalypse
costume. That's right. Hey, you did. That's right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, no, that's Belloc. Belloc!
Belloc!
Or they call him Belouche. Yeah, so many great lines. Bad date. Tons and tons of really great lines.
Asps. Very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
You go first.
The movie was actually even referenced just last week on Silicon Valley.
Which part?
When Guilfoyle and Dinesh are talking about, he's like, oh, you're like hiding in a basket and Indiana Jones is running around looking... Guilfoyle's like, no, it was Marion who's in the basket. Just last week they were referencing that movie. Gets old.
Oh, shit. Speaking of that fucking, the fucking, like, 15-minute sequence when they're in Egypt, right?
Yes.
And the fucking part, like, I'm sure people do know, but if you don't, then here's some knowledge for your ass. So apparently during those days of filming, while they were in Egypt, and Marion Ravenwood was being kidnapped and carried around in the basket... Harrison Ford, the actor, was suffering from a really bad case of diarrhea.
Intestinal disease.
Dysentery. And then
the shits. Yeah.
There's the fucking part where the crowd, like, spreads out, and he's just fucking, like, standing there and looks up, and there's this fucking guy that has this, like Punjabi sword, like, swinging it around, and he's supposed to be fighting with him. The original script called for Indiana Jones to, like, fucking, like, have this, like...
Bust out the whip and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, Harrison Ford's like, fuck this shit, fucking shoots him, and he fucking dies, but they kept it in the movie because it's so fucking good, it works.
One of the, like, most famous scenes of all time, yeah. Super, super funny.
Oh, so good.
Yep. I love everything about it. I probably watch it once a year. Watch it with my kids. Watched all three of the movies with my kids, you know, and they love them too. Like, that's how you know something holds up.
Yeah.
When a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old can watch a 35-year-old movie and be like, hell yeah.
Yeah, even the part towards the end when they open up the Ark.
Yeah. I had that on video. I actually videotaped my kids watching that for the first time.
Really?
Yes, because it was so freaking, you know...
Like blah!
I knew that their faces were going to be priceless, so we videotaped it, yeah. And their faces were priceless. Like, literally, like, the video is them with, like, jaws agape watching the screen. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, and another example of how you don't need CGI. Practical effects. Fucking work, like one of the most iconic scenes of all time, you know.
Oh, well, shit, like even those parts, but just the fact that, you know, like the CGI that they do use, the CGI, because like the fucking the term even existed back in 1981.
No, it didn't even exist.
Yeah, but we're talking about like practical effects and everything else, like the chase sequence after they leave the Nazi camp to get towards, you know, the point where they have to like steal the Ark and then get all that shit. And he's fucking climbing down the goddamn gears.
The drive shaft.
Yeah, the fucking truck. And, like, the fucking guy that gets, like, beat and he goes over the fucking cliff and all that shit. Like, that shit's fucking goddamn scary.
Yes.
And somehow it looks real enough that you're still, you know, kind of wondering to yourself, like, how the hell did George Lucas and Steven Spielberg not make more movies of this vein?
Yeah, and the way that Spielberg was really has a lot in common with some of the great directors like Hitchcock and guys like that who are so great with things like suspense. Again, like we were talking about earlier, you don't need wall-to-wall action. You don't need cars flying off of a big truck on the freeway and other cars are driving around them and all this kind of stuff. Like, take the scene where Indy... is, you know, Marion is trapped inside the jet, which is slowly sort of hovering around while it's leaking gas, and Indy is, you know, fighting the big Nazi.
The big Nazi that appears in all three Indiana Jones movies, too.
Not only appears in all three Indiana Jones movies, but I believe is the same guy that plays General Kale from the aforementioned Willow.
Oh, shit, look at you.
Yeah.
Which you saw last night.
Which I saw this morning.
This morning. It's last night and this morning.
I had time to IMDb all this shit. No, but that's a great scene. It's like, there's not tons of action going on, but there's a million things happening in that scene.
Yeah.
She's trapped in there. The thing is rotating.
The fucking gasoline fire is like spooling around like, oh shit, the shit's gonna fucking explode.
It's spilling gas everywhere. Yeah. The fire is getting closer. He's getting his ass kicked by this Nazi. It's just like this bad, like those old 80s movie punches, you know, like that really
just like drops.
Yeah.
But then he comes back. He fucking like fucking haymaker after haymaker, and like he fucking like stuns him a little bit, but then, you know, obviously like it still doesn't matter. But then the plane has come full circle.
The reveal,
So anyway,
so great.
I goddamn love that movie.
Well,
Raiders or
too bad they made four of them. Too bad they're making five.
God damn it, Raiders or Temple?
Oh, I go the order they came in.
Yeah, Raiders. Yeah, you're right.
Up to and including the fourth one. Raiders is the best. Temple's the second. Crusade is the third best. And then there's a huge
drop off between Crusade and fucking Crystal Skull, though.
Massive drop off.
Like three waterfall drop off with John Hurt. Like I didn't mean to make this movie.
Yeah, and everybody comes off a waterfall. Like a 90-year-old man that goes over a waterfall like that and just gets up and like. That's it. It's over.
Son of a bitch.
No broken, you know, wrists or anything like that. They just all get up and walk away.
Stupid.
LaBeouf is like swinging from vines with monkeys and shit.
God, fuck! I nuked the goddamn franchise. Like, honestly, as a final aside, as we wrap up the Untitled Movie Podcast on MoreLikeRadio.com, Raiders, as quoted by Wikipedia, because that's where I get all my information from now, it is often ranked as one of the greatest films of all time, both in the action-adventure genre and in general. The film is ranked number 2 overall on Empire's 2008 list of 500 greatest movies of all time.
Number 2.
It made $389.9 million at the box office when it came out in 1981.
$81.
How much do you think it was for the budget?
How much was the budget?
Yes.
Oh, I would guess that the budget was probably something along the lines of $50 million.
18.
18!
18.
What the fuck?
Right? Jeez. Which means it can be done, you fuckers. And so, get inspired. Follow the Untitled Movie Podcast on morelikeradio.com at the UMP on MLR. Watch classic movies. In fact, watch. You know, I'm glad that you suggested to me to watch Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, because I would have never watched it had it not been for your suggestion.
So it's one of those movies that's just disappeared. Yeah.
Do you have any other movies that you would recommend to our listeners? As far as like, you know, like, you probably didn't think of this movie, but you probably should. Like, go ahead and take a look at it, and, you know, like, get back to us and let me know what you think.
One of the movies that I often recommend in times like that is one of the earlier David O. Russell movies, Flirting with Disaster.
Which, that was Ben Stiller?
That's the one with Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
Ben Stiller, Alan Alda, fucking huge cast in it. Like, Patricia Arquette plays his wife. Josh Brolin is in it.
I've never seen it.
That is one of the movies that I usually will recommend to people if they're like, hey, recommend something I've never seen before. It's an easy movie to recommend because it's got a shitload of people you've heard of.
Yeah.
And it's a comedy, and I think it's super funny, but also really touching. Like, everything that David O. Russell does well now and is known for doing well.
Yeah.
This is a movie, he did it and nobody sort of paid attention or knew about it.
Right, right.
It's a great fucking movie. It's got, like, you know, like, all kinds of stuff. Like, it's got, like, tons of, like, subplots, like, Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin's in it.
Josh Brolin is in it. Plays like a detective. That there's like a twist with him and his partner. It's also a detective. It's got like this like drug subplot. Ben Stiller's trying to find his birth parents. He goes through like several mistakes before he actually ends up finding his parents.
Oh shit!
Super funny fucking movie.
All right. Well, Flirting with Disaster. I will check that out then. I will watch it. On my goddamn vacation, goddamn it, because fucking doing it. But in the meantime, we will not be doing a podcast next Sunday because I will be in Bonnaroo.
Yep.
Having the time of my life doing all the goddamn drugs allegedly that I can possibly get my hands on. Mm-hmm. But we will do a podcast at some point in within the next like 10 to 15 days. But yeah, we do appreciate your patronage, Chris. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you.
For being here and for talking on the Untitled Movie Podcast and MoreLikeRadio.com. We leave you with the Raiders of the Lost Ark soundtrack. Score. Yeah. Have fun with that. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend. And tip your bartenders. Thank you.
Okay, peace out.